Second reading is taken from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 16, and that's on a printed sheet with your service outline. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them, until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Then Herod, when he saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men, became furious. And he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem, and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men.
Yesterday, my wife and I celebrated our 11th wedding anniversary. You're allowed to go ah or ooh or something appropriate. And one incident which sticks in my mind from the early days of our marriage was the sheer panic on the day that I lost my wedding ring. I guess it happens to most married people at some point, but it's fairly early on in our marriage that I lost our wedding ring, and we looked everywhere. We turned this flat upside down. We looked in the Hoover bag. We looked in the bin. We looked in the U-bend. Absolutely everywhere. And nothing. A few days later, we're sitting having dinner together at the table, and I suddenly realised that I was staring at my wedding ring, which was about 2 feet away from my nose, and it was on top of the pepper mill in the middle of the table, around the little sort of metal thingy job at the top. And I must have been doing some DIY or something noble, and had taken it off and put it on there and completely forgotten about it. And it had been there all along, right underneath my nose. What if the meaning of life were right underneath our noses? What if it had been there all along? I don't want to get too heavy, but I guess at some point most of us find ourselves asking the big questions of life. So, you know, what's the point of life? Where have I come from? Where am I going? What will happen when I die? Is there a God? If so, can I know him? Where can I find peace? Where can I find hope? And sometimes, I guess, we may all feel that life is a bit like being given a piece of IKEA furniture to assemble. And you open the box and inside there's these bits of wood and so on, but they haven't got the little instruction sheet. And they haven't got the little Allen key thingy either. You think, well, you know, how am I supposed to put this thing together? And sometimes it maybe feels a bit like that with life. But what if the meaning of life were right underneath our noses all along? What if the meaning of life and the meaning of Christmas were actually the same thing? I guess many folk would never think to look in that place for a moment. And with good reason, because Christmas just seems to be about presents and turkey and lots of booze. Could the meaning of life really be found somewhere in all of that? Or what is Christmas really all about? In our increasingly secular society, the answer to that question is not at all obvious. So one Christmas card website I went on is divided into three categories. You've got fun, you've got contemporary, and you've got classic. And fun cards are sort of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer gags, that's about it. Contemporary is sort of arty scenes. And then classic, even classic is just sort of Father Christmas and snowy scenes and Christmas trees and so on. But there, sort of hidden away in the classic section, I eventually found a picture of three guys on camels. Ring any bells? The three wise men. In the first Matrix film, I don't know if that's familiar to you at all, but the first Matrix film, you've got this guy Neo who's slumped at his desk, half asleep, in front of his computer screen, which may be an experience familiar to some from working life. But anyway, there's Neo slumped in front of his computer screen, half asleep, and suddenly on his computer screen appears these words. Wake up, Neo. The Matrix has you. Follow the white rabbit. And he's completely baffled, you know, what does this mean? And suddenly there's a knock at the door, and he goes and he opens it, and there's some people standing there, and one of them has got a white rabbit tattooed on her shoulder. So he makes the connection, and he follows this crew, and off they go, and all the truth is all revealed. If we want to find the meaning of Christmas, and with it the meaning of life, and everything, don't follow the white rabbit, but do follow the wise men, and they'll take us there. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to follow them for a few minutes and see where they go. Now, we haven't sung it today, but you know the carol which begins, which is all about them. We three kings of Orient are. Actually, two speculations there in the first line. We don't know that there were kings, and we don't know how many of them there were. But apart from that, what we do actually know is in the reading that was just read to us. And they're described, you'll see there in verse 1, as wise men. And that's not sort of flattering them. That was an official role. That was a job, if you like, a job description in the ancient world. In the ancient world, these guys would have been royal advisors. And we read that they came from the east in verse 1, so maybe Babylon or Persia. And it seems they must have been into stargazing. When in verse 2 a particular star appeared, they saw this as a sign. And they set out on this long, long journey to Jerusalem. It was a long journey. It would have taken many, many months. So back in those days, of course, there was no sort of easy jet connection. Maybe just a few Ryanair camels. We're not actually told, you know, what they went on, but presumably a few Ryanair camels, you know, which seemed cheap initially, until you've added in all the extras, and it all sort of adds up. And, you know, massive effort, long, hazardous journey. It may well have been a whole year, the round trip. And that is a long time away from home. Now, when they get to Jerusalem, we read in verse 8 that they were directed to Bethlehem. And there, to their joy, in verse 9, this star reappears like a sort of first century sat-nav, and it guides them to a particular house. And in that house, they finally found what they were looking for and what they'd set out on their journey to find. They found the answer to all their questions. What did they find? Well, verse 11 says they found a child. Child sitting on his mother's knee. How old, we're not told, but maybe 6 months, maybe 12 months. And we read that they fell down and they worshipped him. A bunch of grown men leave their jobs, they leave their homes, they leave their country. For what? For a child. Not to help a child, not to rescue a child, but to fall down and to worship him. Now, does that strike you as odd behavior at all? Didn't happen after the birth of any of our four kids. We did have our parents-in-law came over from Sweden, okay, and they did bring some presents with them. But that was for their grandchildren. It wasn't for a complete stranger. And they certainly didn't fall down and worship any of them. How could a child possibly hold the key to the meaning of life? I mean, if you get lost in central London, you don't go and find the nearest toddler and ask them for directions. Well, how much more if you get lost in life? I mean, if I want to know the answers to the big questions of life, I don't go and ask our 18-month-old Nelson. You know, he just sort of points at things and grunts and so on. It'd be crazy. How could a child be the key to anything? Well, it depends who he is. It all depends on who he is. You'll notice that when the wise men arrive in Jerusalem, their first question is not, where is the nearest hotel? But their first question in verse 2 is, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? And Herod, who was the king in that region, he then asks his religious leaders in verse 4 where the Christ was to be born. This was not just any old child. The Old Testament scriptures look forward to the day when God would send the ultimate king. In fact, this king would be God himself stepping onto the stage of human history. And this divine ruler would rescue his people, and he would rule over everyone and forever. He'd bring forgiveness and blessing and relationship with God himself. And his kingdom would never end. And all the answers to the big questions of life would be found in him. So all those questions I began with about, you know, where have we come from, where are we going, how can I know God, how can I know peace and hope and forgiveness, all these answers would be found in him. And his title was the Christ, or the Messiah. And that is who this child was. Now, how do we know this child is the real deal? I mean, these wise men, they were clearly in no doubt. They had this God-given sign, this star, which guided them to the spot. And when they get there, they don't sort of ask 101 questions to check out this child's credentials. They just fell down and they worshipped him. So they clearly knew. They knew their search was over. But what about us? How can we be so sure? We've actually got a lot more to go on than the wise men did. So the wise men returned home. And they didn't see what we now see recorded for us in the gospel accounts. That the Christ child became a man. And as a man, he lived the perfect life. And he taught like no one else had ever taught. And he did things which no one else ever did. He healed the sick with a word. And he raised the dead with a word. And he walked on water. And he changed water into wine. And the list goes on. And in the end, he suffered on the cross and died for us, for our forgiveness. And he was raised to life, and he returned to heaven. Now, in every detail, the life of Jesus matched the life of the Christ as it was described back in the Old Testament scriptures, which had been written hundreds of years before Jesus came. And the very first of those details in the Old Testament was the place of his birth. The religious leaders here in verse 6, they quote an Old Testament passage which prophesied that the Christ would be born in Bethlehem. And there are actually two Bethlehems. And so, to make sure, it specifies which Bethlehem they're talking about. So it says, Bethlehem in the land of Judah. Now, that was the place on Jesus' birth certificate. That was the very place on the birth certificate of Jesus. That little town, population of maybe 1,000 people, it wasn't big. Now, it doesn't prove categorically that he's the Christ. It doesn't prove he's the Christ. But you could say it cuts the odds at the bookmakers dramatically. I mean, unlike the England World Cup hosting bid, it gets him through the first round. I mean, it surely makes the claim at least worth a closer look. We've just sung this carol, haven't we? O little town of Bethlehem. I don't know if it's ever struck you, but if that carol had begun with any other place name, you could dismiss Jesus as a fraud. So if that carol began, O little town of Capernaum, or O little town of Swindon, or O little town of Milton Keynes, not only does it not sound very good, but it would mean that at that point you could just dismiss Jesus' claim to be the Christ. You could just kick it into touch at that point. So to find the meaning of Christmas, and with it the meaning of life, don't follow the white rabbit, follow the wise men. And when we do that on our journey's end, we find a child, Jesus the Christ. Now a man who has died for us, who has been raised to life and returned to heaven. Well, how should we respond to him? We mustn't respond like Herod. We mustn't respond like Herod. Herod was also known as Herod the Great. He was the king of Judea from 40 BC. Herod was wealthy, he was clever, he was politically gifted, and he loved power. The news that another king had been born was not news that he wanted to hear, because another king meant a challenge to him. It was a challenge to his authority and to his power. And so we read in verse 8 that Herod tried to get the wise men to lead him to the Christ child. And Herod claimed, you know, I want to worship him as well. His real motives are revealed down in verse 13. He wanted to destroy him. And when the wise men didn't play ball, we read in verse 16 that Herod was furious and he turned to genocide. Now, all Herod knew was that the Christ was a male child, 2 years old or under, who lived in Bethlehem. But he didn't know which one it was. And so he killed all of them. He wiped them all out, unaware that the young family had actually made their escape under cover of darkness. Now, it's sort of high-octane, action-packed stuff, and it's fairly extreme. Herod's response is fairly extreme. But the big shock is that the response of Herod lives on. And it is closer to home than we may like to think. There's a gift website called xmas.co.uk, which claims to be the home of Christmas in the UK. And at one level, of course, it makes perfect sense to abbreviate Christmas to Xmas, and we all do that, myself included. But at a deeper level, there is something in all of us, and again, myself included, which does want to get rid of the Christ and to replace him with an X. And for the same reason as Herod, that we see him as a threat. The Bible says that the essence of sin is that I want to run my life my own way, that I don't want someone else telling me how to live. But if the true king has come, then I can't get away with that. And so replacing with an X is convenient, because it leaves me running the show. But if Jesus really is the king, then that policy puts me on a collision course with somebody who is much, much bigger and who is going to rule. So beware responding to Jesus like Herod with hostility. And we must beware responding to Jesus like the religious leaders with apathy. There was a basketball coach who once had a player who wasn't pulling his weight. And so the basketball coach said to the player, "Son, what is it with you? Ignorance or apathy?" And the player replied, "I don't know and I don't care." Now, the religious leaders did know, and yet they still didn't care. So they knew that the Christ was to be born in Bethlehem. And in verse 5, they've got this Old Testament quotation at their fingertips when Herod asked them where the Christ is going to be born. And so when these wise men pitch up from the east with the news that the Christ has indeed been born and that they've come to worship him, you would expect these religious leaders to drop everything. Instead, they just drop out of the story. There's no mention of these guys again after verse 6. Now, isn't that strange? Isn't that very strange that the Christ had been born? The event that would divide history into BC and AD. And these guys, these religious leaders, they just stayed in to watch TV. Bethlehem was 5 miles down the road from Jerusalem, and they were too busy to go. Now, the truth is that they saw no need for the Christ. By this stage, they'd got their own little religious system, which had no place in it for Jesus. And they thought they were good enough as they were. So they didn't need a king to come and rescue them. They didn't need a king to bring forgiveness from God. And the spirit of those religious leaders lives on. Just like them, many people today have no time at all for Jesus. They don't see the need. Fine as I am, thank you very much. Haven't got time to take the bus down to Bethlehem. Couldn't be bothered. Many religious people have no time for Jesus either as they rescue a king. So they think that God will just accept them on their own merits because they're good enough and because they're religious. But if we didn't need him, why would God have sent him? If we didn't need him, would God really have sent him? So sent him to be born into this world and to die on a cross for us. Why would God have bothered if that wasn't actually our greatest need? And so instead of apathy this Christmas time, why not take away these booklets on your sheets? There's a copy of one of the gospel accounts and there's a little booklet explaining the meaning of Christmas. Why not take them away and read them? Why not sign up for the Christianity Explored course we run here on the barge, which kicks off in January, and find out more? So we've seen two ways to reject Jesus the Christ. There's the fist of Herod in hostility, and there is the drift of the religious leaders in apathy. But there is this alternative, which is to follow the wise men. Verse 11 says, they fell down and they worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. We were made to worship. Not to worship ourselves or our careers or our money, but to worship the Christ. To give him not just our treasures, but to give him our whole lives and to serve him and to love him. That is what we were created for, and that is where we find true purpose. That is the meaning of Christmas, and that is the meaning of life. In the words of the car bumper sticker, wise men and women still worship him today. So this Christmas time, don't follow the white rabbit, but do follow the wise men.